So for those of you who are new, we just chanted the three refuges in Pali, the language that they were written down in from the Buddha's time. I take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, which is really what we're doing when we practice this ancient way. We are taking refuge. And the more consciously we do it, the more useful it is, and the more fully we do it. So taking refuge in the Buddha is taking refuge in that aspect of ourself that's really present, awake, and recognizes the interconnectedness with all life that is that conditions our life. Taking refuge in the Dharma means that we really access the wisdom, the ancient wisdom that is available in so many ways, and also the wisdom that's available through really noticing what phenomena are going on and what the nature of it is. And so really being very present to all of the information we get when we're not, when our mind is not clouded and distracted. And then taking refuge in the Sangha is really recognizing our place in the great community of all beings, and also more specifically turning to our fellow practitioners for support and encouragement and reminders. So there are a lot of different meanings to these three treasures, and we can continue to kind of plumb the significance of these three treasures in our own lives as part of our practice. And I just wanted to start with a quote from Dogen Zenji, who's a very great modern in relation to Shakyamuni Buddha, but he's a Japanese master. And he says, "Those who see worldly life as an obstacle to Dharma see no Dharma in everyday actions. They have not yet discovered that there are no everyday actions outside of Dharma." So as practitioners in the world, it's really one possibility that we can see what is the true nature of our life. What is the true nature of everything that happens inside, internally, in our internal mind states? And what is the nature of actions in the world? What's really going on? There's nothing mystical about this. This is what we do all the time. We're kind of puzzling at, you know, we ask ourselves, what is the nature when we say, what could possess that person to do such and such, right? Or, I don't know what I was thinking. That's a form of reflecting on what is the nature of this Dharma that I was acting according to, and how correct was I in it? So I wanted to, thinking a lot about when we are practicing, one of the things we're doing is developing concentration. When we do Zazen, we're developing concentration. So for a moment, I'll talk now about Zazen as opposed to mindfulness. I mean, when we're being mindful, we're paying attention. We're noticing. We're really right here. It's a very general state, and it's also a very situated in a sense of me. Zazen, on the other hand, is not only, we begin with mindfulness, which we exercise when we're watching the breath or counting the breath. We're narrowing our focus. So we're coming from all the activity that got us here, mind activity, body activity, and we begin to narrow into the breath, counting the breath or listening to sounds. We're narrowing our focus and developing concentration. And at a certain point, though, in Zazen, we are free enough, we are concentrated enough, that the sense of me does it disappear? I don't know. It's always available, but we are not so identified with it. Our identification with the me, with the seer, is no longer of interest, would be a way to say it. So mindfulness is a very important part of our practice, and it's not the whole thing. Just as mindfulness is a very important part of our life, but it's not our whole life. And so there are a lot of different approaches to, you know, this Tuesday, by the way, the Dharma discussion is going to be on the two truths. And we'll plumb this, we'll explore this this situation that we are in. We can be aware of our the conditions of our life, the conditions that form our states of mind and body and world, and we can also become aware of the source. So relative and absolute, there are a lot of different words for this, but we'll be looking at, and so it, that conditions when we're talking about mindfulness, we are talking about, we're kind of approaching it from the relative point of view, which certainly is valid, and there's also from absolute points of view several of ways to look at that, and. So I think about this phrase, it's one of my favorites. If you've been around me, you've heard this probably ad nauseum. Being an ancient tree in a high wind. Anybody heard me say that? I'd be an ancient tree in a high wind. Which is a koan. It's one of the checking koans that we use. And one of the beauties of it is, one, it's such an evocative image. Can we all relate to that? Has everybody experienced an ancient tree here? Have you been in the presence of an ancient tree? I was just out at Yahats, and there's a, how old is that spruce there? I mean, it's, you know, the diameter is the diameter of this room. I mean, it's a remarkable tree. So what is that spruce in a high wind? I'm sure it has experienced many high winds. You know, what is the state of mind? How do we go about working with a koan like this? What is being an ancient tree in a high wind? Does anybody have a notion of how that would be answered? Nope, no words. If you've been around an old tree in a high wind, it's, or maybe this isn't even moving, it's just, but this is rooted, right? I'd kind of like to encourage everybody, can we stand up and all be ancient trees? Because this is part of what I'm trying to get at. Because the only way you can answer this koan, answer it, is to embody it. And so what is the sensation in the body of that kind of rootedness that has been rooted not only now, but for 500 years, 1,000 years, that kind of rootedness. And now let there come up a high wind. And what happens to that rootedness? What happens to that rootedness?
Nothing. It's
right there. Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a wonderful practice to find an old tree and stand by it or sit against it and commune with it. it's a wonderful reminder. It's also, you know, when we have our personal experiences with old trees, we can appreciate why it's so important to protect them. You know, those there are many people who climbed them and wouldn't get out when the trucks came to cut them down, to maintain old growth forests. Very important for us to be around that kind of elder. And in that situation, we're aware of our own ancient nature. We get in touch with it. And what is that? It goes beyond our little mouse hole concerns of our little lives, right? We all have these very immediate lives, which hopefully we're wholeheartedly engaging in. But also, there's this other aspect of our life, which is we share an enormous, an eternal life that we have access to, that we enact during Zazen. When we allow all of this, we can call it the small self, not to demean that self, but simply to kind of characterize it in relation to what actually our awareness, which has no beginning and end. We have access through awareness to an enormous source. Mythos of enlightened beings. One of the things that we talk about is how they have the ability to read minds and to know the future. And what that has always suggested to me is, yes, once we can really disidentify with our small personal concern, we have access to a lot of information. Through our senses, and maybe even not through our senses, but more directly. So, how do we be an ancient tree in a high wind? What are the high winds in your life at the moment? Aging. It's an ongoing storm with incredibly crystal quiet days of beauty and perfection. And then the winds sweep up again, right? You might be able to identify with that. What are some other high winds that are in people's lives right now?
Alzheimer's. Depressed and grieving teenage child.
Depressed and grieving teenage child. Anything else?
We just had that fire threat. That was a huge, I mean,
the fire.
Sitting in the midst of that was totally being an ancient tree.
Change.
Moving elderly mother to Corvallis.
Moving elderly mother to Corvallis. We probably all have something that comes to mind. And if it doesn't now, it will later this afternoon. You know, I mean, these storms, this is the first noble truth. The truth of difficulty, dissatisfaction, losing our way, being flummoxed, being in states of extreme fear or confusion or depression. I could go on and on. So being able to be an ancient tree doesn't mean that if you practice these things don't come up. It simply means that when we can be and when we have access to this very great awareness, it immediately grounds us. We are immediately drawing from ancient roots. We have all kinds of ways, an ancient tree has all kinds of ways of taking in nourishment. Another part of ancient, we can think about tree, but we can also think about ancient. I mean, we're always in the presence of ancientness. We have a very lively sense of time, which we've developed in a lot of conventional ways. Huh? And most of us experience time as a big hand pushing us. I mean, often that's the way. It's an ingredient in anxiety. I don't have enough time. I have too much to do. I never get to the end of it. When will I? Or, time is passing too quickly. Or there's always a time element. The one thing about ancient is it steps out of this very palpable sensation of time. And it brings a spaciousness into the sensibility about time. Do you know what I mean when I say that? It opens something up. Which is incredibly, I think of it almost as the compassion of the Buddha. You know, this sense of vast time is an element in the experience of compassion, this softening and opening, this sense of everything being all right in that span, that time span. So that's another way, you know, when we talk about koans, be an ancient tree in a high wind, these are like images that we can use to endlessly reflect on our experience. They're sources for all kinds of inspiration. So what comes up for me about this might be different from what comes up for you when this comes to mind. Sometimes, you know, when I talk to my kids and something's going on in their life, that's a button for me. I get anxious. Immediately I think, be an ancient tree in a high wind here. It's very useful because I immediately become aware of all the stories I weave around whatever they're telling me that may or may not have any validity to them at all, right? And mostly have never. Anybody here who has kids, think of how much you've worried about your kids. And that basically, actually, they manage their life as adequately as you have. So, I just wanted to ask now about this enormity of awareness that comes, that is suggested when we say the word ancient, and to apply it to Zazen. And to ask how many of us during these periods of Zazen this morning were able to touch that enormous awareness? And how much were we caught up in what I think of as my mousehole awareness? This is said not to be self-critical, but to assess and to kind of help us reinforce our determination to, okay, in Zazen, this is an opportunity to put aside all of that and open awareness. So, I got a few poems that I thought would be really great to read. As you know, I love to read poems. Here's one from Lin Ji. That's his Chinese name. Rinzai is his Japanese name. If you want to be free, get to know your real self. It has no form, no appearance, no root, no basis, no abode, but is lively and buoyant. It responds with versatile facility, but its function cannot be located. Therefore, when you look for it, you become further from it. When you seek it, you turn away from it all the more. So when we are in Zazen, when we're looking for something, we're very wrapped up in, identified with self. That's what he's referring to. When we say there's nothing to be gained from Zazen, that's true, and yet no thing to be gained. Rather, there's something to be left aside. All things to be left aside. So how do we sit Zazen without grasping after anything? Which is why we had an orientation today, and the question that comes up, and this is like one of the central questions, is without interfering with my breath. That is what we're doing in Zazen. How do we do this? And the only way we discover it is by doing it regularly and figure it out. How do you do Zazen without doing? How do we be without interfering with our being? And the only way we can discover that is the same way we discovered when we stood up and we were in a tree. You just do it through the body. There's no answer for the mind. That won't help. This is from Stonehouse. Don't think a mountain home means you're free. A day doesn't pass without its problems. Old ladies steal my bamboo shoots. I love that line. Boys lead oxen into the wheat. Grubs and beetles destroy my greens. Boars and squirrels devour the rice. When what happens isn't what you expect, forget it and turn to yourself. So he's saying the same thing. The circumstances of our personal life are going to be, you know, I mean, boars and squirrels devoured the rice, but there's some grains left to eat. Grubs and beetles destroy the greens, but there's some greens left in the garden. Boys lead oxen into the wheat, but you can grab it up even if it's a bit flattened. And old ladies steal my bamboo shoots. Well, ask them to throttle them. Old ladies steal my bamboo shoots. But our days are like that, you know. And then a couple of more short ones. These are from Isa. A world of dew, and with every dew, within every dewdrop, a world of struggle. Everything, all of it. The wisdom release brought to us by being, by having equanimity, knowing that we get everything. We get some difficulties and we get some blessings. A world of dew, and with every dewdrop, a world of struggle. And then the last one I wanted, because I just think this is so true. Even though I'm in Kyoto, when the huku cries, and a huku, I suppose, is a bird, I long for Kyoto. Even though I'm in Kyoto, when the cuckoo cries, I long for Kyoto. Even though we have everything, you know, there's still this longing for just right, for completeness, for perfection that we're in the midst of. Being an ancient tree in a high wind, if this phrase is inspiring, please adopt it, use it, practice it, kind of like the tree posture in yoga. Sometimes when you're doing tree, you're like, just a little twig, and other times thank you very much for listening.
The four great Bodhisattva vows can be found on